respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of the rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Dashami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhamma. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi saha. Again and again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. we are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Sort of been looking at, or at least I have, and I noticed something that was puzzling me about yesterday when we did the afternoon sesshin. And so I think we had four sits, and the first sit was, you know, I was there. Second and third, I was like flailing around, you know, if it was, and then by the fourth, I was sort of back. And what was arising for me was that it's sort of like physical training, like if I were training for, you know, a marathon or something. It would have shown me where I was at my point in my training. You know, like, okay, I'm okay for 4 miles, and then I need to really kind of build up.
So we've been looking at what's going on during meditation. It's been a topic that's been coming up recently, looking at keeping the attention on the counting. And you noticed something during the sesshin afternoon that we had yesterday, that for the first sit, it sounds like you were able to really be there and put your attention on the counting. And then you noticed in subsequent sits, there was a little bit of flailing around. And then it's as if almost like as you were saying, in training for an Olympic event, at the fourth sit, there was that, and you didn't say this, but almost like that second wind or that, you know, ability to really stay focused on the counting. And so it may be a little bit like, you see, it's just it's training, just like training for anything else.
An endurance training.
In a way.
Because what dropped in as you were reflecting that was that fourth sit, it was like there was the willingness was back, or the intention was stronger than the second and third. And I noticed this kind of low grade resistance to that being so.
The resistance to that, to the kind of flailing that went around in the second, third sit.
That whatever, we should be better, or what, you know, whatever that is. And after the whole thing was over, I was so tired. And I've been kind of wondering since then, was the tired because of the training, or the tired because of the resistance? What was the tired?
Another good thing to watch.
Yeah.
Just noticing that tiredness that was present. after the sesshin, and it sounds like there was kind of a question that arose. Was it the resistance that created the feeling of the entire, or what was the other possibility?
The training, just practicing.
Just practicing.
You know, just practicing. You know, it's just comparing it to a physical event is what I'm doing, and maybe it's not a good comparison, I don't know, but it does feel like it was just a lot of good training intensively for an afternoon. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So just giving this person an opportunity to train, and again, in an area of practice that's important to her. And to watch all that arises with that.
Yeah. And one other little thing, it's actually not a little thing, a big thing that's coming up right now is, because the question was there as you were talking, well, do I even want to get this endurance? Do I even want to master this endurance sport right here? You know, like training the attention for... And what someone told me once that I was never really taught to use my third chakra, that I'm much more sort of need, I'm motivated by what's in front of me and need-based, you know, like if I see something, we'll pitch in, we'll do it. But to be able to really direct one's energy in the way that one wants to and not what's externally
motivated. Not externally motivated. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
Which ties into the two, you know, the Enneagram and the dissatisfaction assignment for the email class, I think. And it strikes me that that's a really good reason to practice this endurance, because attention training, because that's what will, as a two anyway on the Enneagram, that's what will enable me to stay with the promptings of the heart and stay, see if I can say this, stay attending to that where my habitual karmic habit is to be drawn out and respond to that. To that which is outside of myself. And so if I can do it on the cushion, then I can do it off the cushion, ostensibly.
So seeing the opportunity is actually what you're doing is training to stay with the heart.
Yeah.
Whereas you notice this karmic predisposition or pull to have the attention directed toward external needs and, you know, and coming from that place rather than staying in this solid place of, you might say, center or heart, and seeing that the cushion is the place.
The training ground.
It's great the
gym.
Training ground.
It's the gym.
Yes. 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 Yeah. I just think of, you know, as we all enter the hall, how we make our show, and it's like just an acknowledgement of the fact that this is the training ground.
Yeah.
And where each of us does practice.
I wanted to look at that Enneagram thing too.
The Enneagram.
Yeah, it was fun because you know, we were invited to look at what resistance arises to the holy idea.
The holy idea.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm a five, and the holy idea is holy omniscience. And I couldn't get past that.
You couldn't get past holy omniscience.
Omniscience. Holy smokes. I just tripped over that. I trip over it every time I get there. It's just interesting. I mean, there's just this, what in the world does that mean? You know? I mean, faith, law, willing, or whatever the others are, I can go there, but omniscience is just sort of, has my mind smoking. So that's just interesting to see. And, well, actually, I see something about that. But first let me just say, so then this most recent assignment was the way we resist, you know, the form that resistance takes. So the holy omniscience translates into each of us is inseparable from the whole fabric of life, and the distinctions, the boundaries that distinguish us are not ultimate. So I've seen a number of things about that. One is I really like the way it says the boundaries that distinguish us are not ultimate.
The boundaries that distinguish us
are not ultimate. It doesn't say there are no boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I find comfort in that in the same way that I find comfort in the admonition not to cherish opinions. Mm-hmm. I've talked about this before. It doesn't say don't have them. It says don't cherish them. And so I found it felt to me like that same kind of kind statement, that things will arise, but just remember they're not ultimate. So I found that very sweet about that. But so the form of resistance is to back off from the inseparableness part and go into isolation and study in order to feel safe.
So as a five, the way resistance shows up is to go into separation, study about things, and
in order to feel safe.
In order to feel safe.
So that felt right on. Actually, when I read through the whole list, I could identify with 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. All those things that people that we do, and they all translate to me and basically into going back into separateness.
Going into separateness.
Just like all the holy ideas translate to me into being in inseparableness. But anyway, what I recognize is that feels like very much my pattern to isolate. And even if I don't isolate physically, to sort of in myself to say I'm out of here.
There's so many ways to isolate.
There's so many ways to isolate.
Other than just physically, and you see that happening for you.
Yeah, and I do it. I mean, I'm aware that I do that. And so that was just good. I mean, it felt like confirmation. And it arises from there's some feeling of unsafety. That's what happens. There's a feeling of threat.
It's the feeling of unsafety that gives rise to the wanting to separate or to...
Yeah, something ego, I suppose, feels threatened. And so then the old pattern is to remove oneself from the threat.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and again, as I was looking at because I've been reading through all the types that when those assignments came out, that again, to me, it feels like, in a way, that's true for all of them, that what happens is something arises that feels unsafe or threatening. And so, in one way or another, we back off from being of all of it, and back into our own little selves.
So something threatens and we feel unsafe and we back off. And then the ironic part is we back off into the relationship.
The least safe place we could be.
The least safe place we could be.
Yeah, so that just all felt right on. And, I was going to say something about omniscience. Being omniscient, I guess I must say something about omniscience. I didn't like that term because it's so big.
So it was so big?
It's so big. Mm. I mean, they can't get much beyond being omniscient in terms of size. And and so that felt actually like a familiar pattern. And it has to do with the withdrawal from being big.
It has to do with it. So you can see that maybe the resistance that arose to it was that maybe karmic habit you have of withdrawing from what's big.
I think that feels unsafe.
That feels unsafe.
And it reminded me, at first I just couldn't, I didn't know why I had that strong reaction to the word, that resistance to the word, but I suspect that's it. And a couple of years ago, Sherry had this birthday book that she mm-hmm. passed around. Mm-hmm. We could look up our birthdays mm-hmm. and see there was descriptions of what that birthday meant. And my particular birthday, the description is the day of huge energy.
Huge.
And I had the same reaction to that.
Kind of omniscient.
it was too big. A day of big energy I could handle, a day of lots of energy, just felt too big. And in fact, when I was little, I had that kind of energy. And I think that my conditioning has been, I've talked about this before, moving from being an 8 to being a 5, my conditioning has been a backing away from that energy, which was apparently not well received. Mm-hmm. So just it just felt like that was a little slice of insight into why I had that reaction.
Yeah, to see why that resistance maybe arose to that fully on omniscience.
Yeah, but somehow being big, that sort of big energy, feels unsafe, mm-hmm. even though it does in fact feel authentic. Mm-hmm. It feels unsafe somehow, and then that's the process. The process is to back out of that.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that and the process is to back off, as if somehow having that smaller energy is
safer.
Safe. Interesting.
Yes. Thank you.
Just a tag on that. I'm 5'2". And,
not 5'2", but a 5.
Just a 5. And I was curious about that word omissions too, because I had always associated that with knowledge. Mm-hmm. Like, it, omniscience is the ability to know everything, or mm-hmm. also to see everything in a way like I could see what my mother is doing right now, even though she's cross-country. Like that. Mm-hmm. And I looked it up in the dictionary, and I can't remember the whole thing, but what I felt like it boiled down to in terms of that definition was like a whole or complete awareness.
A whole or complete awareness. Mm-hmm.
Which is really different than knowing everything on the content. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I've been looking at it like that. It's a process. Mm-hmm. You know, like that omniscience that's being pointed out, just as a speculative thing, mm-hmm. it's more to kind of play around with it, is a process of awareness, of complete awareness.
Mm-hmm. So omniscience, looking at it as a process of complete awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, a process.
Yeah, a process rather than a content.
Exactly.
Like to know everything, like to know all the facts. Doesn't seem particularly useful,
right.
and it's possible too. I think, I mean, at least for me, it's possible for other people. But a process of awareness seems different than that. Seems something I could experience. Like omniscience would be sort of the completeness of that. Kind of like in meditation, I'm practicing that too with the counting, where that's what feels like happens there too. Is there's with the counting of the door, and a lot of times it doesn't happen, but there's a door that opens up to an awareness that feels sort of complete, and there isn't. There's things trying to pull at it, pull the attention out of it, but in itself it's sort of complete.
So just noticing it's omniscience in a way is what's being practiced with meditation and focusing on the breath, and a door opens that brings you into a state of awareness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, I'm loving the counting.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've always counted, but it's been a little fluffy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said there hasn't been a commitment to counting, and I've really been committed to counting. And sometimes it's great, sometimes it's, you know, like the 2 o'clock sit. And you know, it's hot, and my tummy's full of food, and you know, I mean, I keep coming back to counting, but mostly it's just all over the place. But other times, there's like a purity. There can be a purity of, well, I think it was said intention earlier.
Mm-hmm.
There can be a purity of intention in which. I actually don't want all of these interesting and urgent and special thoughts that conditioning your throat is throwing in there to get to engage in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like this space of just it feels like pure awareness that happens.
The image just keeps coming up as you're speaking. It's like an anchor. It's great anchor. Mm-hmm. The counting is to just hold you in that field of awareness.
Yeah, it is like an anchor. I think that's a really good analogy. And I notice when that's happening, a lot of times in meditation, I'll notice that I carry a lot of tension in my shoulder, and especially on my left shoulder, there'll be this knot right there.
Mm-hmm.
I'll suddenly realize that that's there, and then I can consciously relax it. But then a little while later, you know, the knot will be there again. And I notice when I'm really with the counting, and there's a relaxation there. I was thinking about it, but this is what they mean when they talk about taking refuge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, it's kind of big in a way that I think people are talking about. like it's very spacious, mm-hmm. and very relaxed, and that tension isn't happening. You know, the nodding up isn't happening, my shoulders relax. Mm-hmm. And then other times it's amazing because my intention is to count the breath, and there's these thoughts that come up, and it feels volitional that I go with the thoughts. There's just barely volitional, but I just keep on getting caught up in it. But I know from my experience, so I say, we're not doing that. You know, that is not what we're doing. You know, the commitment is we're going to count, we're going to have attention, then it actually happens. But it does take that commitment. It takes a willingness to let go of all that other stuff. And all that stuff can be really compelling.
It's what you describe as the training that we're talking about, mm-hmm. is that you feel that, especially at certain times of the day, the mind really does want to wander and drift, and it takes this, training. Mm-hmm. No, we're not going there, and to come back, like you say, to the refuge of the breath, mm-hmm. and to strengthen that refuge by constantly returning there.
Yeah, and it feels like that's a piece of us being pointed out with the Holy Omissions. You know, and another part of it that's in there is, and this was kind of said earlier, but non-separateness. You know, these boundaries that are sort of, I really noticed that too, that are not ultimate. So I experience myself as, I experience that there are boundaries here, but those are, at a certain level, those are illusory. And that there's a union that's possible, it feels like. I think that word omniscience is covering to a point too. Also, this human happens. You know, I'm not separate. My mind is not separate from kind of mind with a capital M, and like that. And I feel like that is what happens with the counting too in meditation, because it feels like that boundary starts to dissolve a bit, and there's just the breath, just counting, and then conditioning throwing rocks in the pond.
Just feeling that's just beautiful the way you said it, that it's just the boundaries not being ultimate, and to really have that, the anchoring in the breath allows some of the experience of that, to just be, I forget how you said it, but in touch with that larger awareness, and know that these boundaries that we describe as this being or this person are not ultimate. There's a permeability there.
There is. I mean, it's one of those things we're going to talk about. And, it's hard to know what's actually going on, especially trying to, outside of the experience, trying to talk about it in words. It does seem like that. The other thing is there's an energy that comes in that place. It feels like you're kind of tapping into an energy source. You know, the other one is just really the counting is really helpful because, as you know, of course, that's why we do it. It just shows where the attention goes and what the karmic habits are of thought. You know, the pull of the mind away, and those are really choppy, and the energy is choppy, and it's not like these little bursts. I mean, it's just like kind of like, yippee, it's like, oh, look at that idea. But it's not, the other one is more, it's like a gradual sort of growing out of it instead of just this, I think it's just being spent, basically.
It's just being what?
Spent.
Spent. Oh,
yeah, like
drawing
off.
Energy, That kind of the energy that's just kind of erratic or spread or that comes up, that kind of energy is just being spent, and just watching it all.
Justin just mentioned habit. And so I've noticed that that pattern that was mentioned earlier, where in the beginning of meditation, the commitment to counting is very strong, and it's like I'm really able to be there. And then after a while, there's this, all these things are coming in, and then sort of towards the end, I realize that, and the commitment is back. So it's kind of like a bell curve of.
And that's what was mentioned in the sesshin at the beginning. Yeah, exactly.
And so, and that ties in with, and I think that's a habit. That is something that is habitual. That there is this this willingness to be distracted. That's a habit. That is somehow. And I'm seeing it in other areas of my life, how ego identity is supported by habit.
You're seeing how that supporting of the ego identity by pulling away the attention, or allowing the attention to wander, is reinforcing a habit.
And the habit reinforces an identity. Yeah, so one way it kind of showed up just recently is that I've gotten some information about the lymphatic system, which is very interesting to me because I've had a surgery a while back that removed quite a number of my lymph nodes, so I have a compromised lymphatic system in a certain part of my anatomy. And so I've made a commitment to do these kind of massages that stimulate the lymphatic system, and I thought, well, as long as I'm doing that, I could even dry myself after a shower in the same way that stimulates the lymphatic system. And I've been watching how difficult that is, because drying myself after a shower is just something that I do mindlessly, and it's such a habit. Mm-hmm. And so I've just been watching how I'll forget, but it's not forgetting, it's that the mind is doing this lack of attention thing where it's thinking of something else.
You've seen how the body can just be on automatic, the mind is like elsewhere, and the body's just going through this habit.
Yeah, I mean, I've dried myself with a towel 5 million trillion times, you know, so I see that I'm not bringing my attention to that, because I've decided I want to do it in a certain way that's going to reinforce some other things I'm doing to support my lymphatic system. And so it's just that, you know, once you start looking at stuff, you just kind of see it everywhere. And it's like, wow, that is so big. That, how did I not notice that I was never really... And I love my showers. I love my showers. I always have since I was a kid. I used to take sometimes 3 a day before we were aware about water, you know. Before we didn't ever thought there would ever be not enough of anything. And so, I mean, it's like I just love it. And I love... drying yourself is a beautiful, stimulating thing, but yet I realized in this recent awareness that I could bring a lot more awareness to it that I'm not really bringing, yeah, which I'm being encouraged to do right now because I want to do it differently.
So really realizing it, you know, and the showers just being one of many events in one's life, but how much you really love that.
I do.
And yet still, it has been done without being totally present to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's been done in a habitual way.
Yeah.
And now we have this opportunity to actually bring some attention to it.
Right.
Because you really, really are making it, and it's interesting how that awareness came. You know, you just decided that you want to do something to support the body, and why you saw that, oh my gosh, I have been missing this experience.
Right, and if I love it the way it is, how much more will I love it if I'm really, really more there?
Mm-hmm.
And how many other things do I do that, and I've even watched, it's interesting now that I'm looking about habit, I've watched my cat. And, you know, we've changed our living situation, and so all habits kind of got, you know, leveled. And I watched how myself, how I've kind of experimented and explored with different things, and I've watched her too, you know, go here, go there. At the first, she would stay with me. Well, she still stays with me a lot. She's kind of a dog cat, actually. you know, she would sleep on my bed, and I would do certain things, and we've been kind of both adjusting our, and now that she has habits that she does, and I have some that I've done, do now in this different situation.
Yeah,
and so I think it would be just interesting periodically to just take, and I've already started changing things. It's funny. I got it all the way I wanted, and now I'm already changing it. And I think that's all going to help with the, in keeping a conscious thing that I don't want to just do anything, just get all those habits all reintroduced and forget to pay attention.
So just being conscious of how habits get set up as you're in a new environment, you watch how the habits have started now to get set up, even though for a while it sounds like you were forced out of an old habit pattern.
Yeah.
But now it's becoming habitual again, and seeing maybe the value in shaking things up and moving things around and changing things, and so that the being is supported to look at that and to choose new ways and to not fall into those presence. Habits.
Yeah. And I have found it very interesting that an animal does it too. It gets into habits and creates kind of patterns of, you know, this time of the day in this place, this time of the day in this place, things like that, you know. So it's fun to be attending to that right now.
It sounds like you won't have more to bring back to group for us.
Yes, it's just beginning.
And the exploration of
the
habit.
Research, yeah.
Thank you. Alice.
I'm enjoying this conversation very much. It's like one of my favorite stories is Every Moment Zen, about the fellow who comes in out of the rain and puts his umbrella on one side of his shoes and is asked, which side did you put it on? And if he can't remember, or doesn't recall if he did it. I've been looking at paying attention as well. There's been this... I've been waking up in the morning with the counting going, which I find really fascinating, and almost like a grace, almost.
Like grace would only grace would give you
give me that
possibility to wake up.
Right, of all the things I could wake up with, you know, it could be the Doobie Brothers for one count. but counting has been what's up. I've just been really grateful for it. I've also had this practice. First thing that I do when I wake up is I meditate, and before getting dressed or anything like that, I just plop myself down, and I find that that particular sit is perhaps the easiest one that I have throughout the entire day. Hardest being the last one, which I've talked about before, where it's just like my whole body is just one big twitch. And so something about having that go on constantly, like the counting, so
the
not
counting.
Being something that's set for a particular time. Like I think there's a story about when Sherry first started practicing or heard about how to meditate, she counted while driving a really long distance. Something about that just it always struck me. And who knows, maybe it's the next thing that we're all going to attempt to endeavor, you know, just to carry that forward, because I'll even find myself on the path to just all of a sudden they'll be like, hey, there's counting going on. Or, you know, it's either that or the mantra that I've had. And it's amazing how when that is going on, certain other interesting things start to happen. Like I'll walk by a table that I know that I need my mug from, and I'll realize that I had just walk by that table without grabbing the mug, and instantly, I don't know how this happens, but it would be like mug, and you know, and I'm trying to like, okay, now how did that happen? You know, like what was it? Was it an image of it? Because I think it really is working in images too. Like it just showed me exactly what it looked like, and it just popped it in. And so I've been just watching how little things like that happens.
Mm-hmm. So just if I understood what you said, that you've been really attending to the counting.
Or the counting has been.
Your counting's been attending to you. and that you meditate the first, immediately when you get out of bed in the morning, and again in the evening. And I think I heard you saying that, you know, that the counting, rather than just, to being attended to at just particular times of the day, is now starting to just flow into all parts of your day. And what you're noticing is, it seems like maybe there's a little more spaciousness or openness for other information to start happening.
And I've been paying attention to like how that happens, you know, because it does continuously, it does happen as I'm going. It's like for a while I was tracking everything that I ever needed to do on a long list, and repeatedly, like, well, it was actually wasn't on a list, it was on a phone, you know, that I haven't actually been using now, and so what's been fascinating is that, you know, I'm using like crazy stuff, like take your vitamins or something. I'm not, maybe not crazy, but just like just kind of extreme. I mean, like a lot of, and it's like now it feels like it'll tell me what it is. You know, like if I'm not searching around for it, it's almost like it finds me. It almost like back to that attention, that attending to it. It's like I'm not doing that. It's doing me, you know, in a way. And I've just been finding that really relaxing.
Yeah.
And I've noticed now how there's this, you know, something's coming up where I'm gonna, you know, like life changes, and there's this temptation to want to go to conditioned mind to sort everything out, you know, to project into the future, blah, blah. And it's like, what's happening now is it's just like, well, it's time to drop in, and it has. It's just been like very helpful in a way. So I'm not going anywhere in particular with it. I'm just noticing that what's happening with this counting phenomenon is that feels like it is helping that kind of practice of trust and releasing and relaxing. And you know, it's like we always talk about life is informing. It's like, well, what does that mean? Like, so you have an experience of it.
It's not just having an experience of life informing.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. I'm not sure.
Would you say it feels like you're less of a doer? Like with your lists and everything?
I think so. Just, yeah, I do. It feels that way to me. It's like lists exist, but I'm not attending to them. It's like, it's almost like as I'm going along, the thing will happen when it needs to.
So you're the receiver for the information for life coming in, rather than this person doing it, going to the list all the time, seeing what's next. It's a whole shift that you find very relaxing, just having the information come in as needed.
Yeah. And just one last thing is that I do this practice that takes like every five minutes to do, and so I have this timer set, or has been set on this alarm clock that I have in my hermitage. And so it goes off, we go off every 5 minutes, and I've been lazy enough I don't want to keep switching the alarm to be longer for the sitting meditation sometimes. Mm-hmm. So it's funny, like I'll have it on and I forget that it's set for 5 minutes, and so I'll be sitting at 5 minutes, and then it's like, it's interesting as far as when people have been talking about training, it's like, I don't know, it might be useful, but it's, I find it helpful that when it goes off, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm back here, you know, like, so it's almost like if I do wander off within that 30-minute period,
you have a
and anyway, I'm not suggesting that, just I just find it interesting that helpful to have a, you know, maybe like the training wheels to meditation.
Kind of like the whack. I've heard whack about this, the whacker, the stick. And so we'd walk around in meditation.
And I've been enjoying that. So. All right, thank you.
I'm just going to continue because there seems to be a long line of thoughts.
I've been looking at both things that we're talking about today, the counting and the class, the Enneagram class, and with the Enneagram class, I've really been interested that it started out by focusing on those holy ideas, because I had read about them before, but I don't think I'd quite gotten it yet, but I'm really enjoying that as the organization for looking at the Enneatypes. And, you know, there's probably only two or three types on the whole nine that I don't have anything much going with. So there's been a process over the years of, you know, kind of figuring out which one I really am, you know, which kind of has settled down in recent years to somewhere between either a one or a six. And I decided that, I just decided to choose this time. I was going to be one for the purposes of the class rather than having to spend the whole time figuring it out. And so, but it really feels like the insights that I've been having are affirming a particular type, which is the six. Because you know, the holy idea is holy faith, which, as I understand it, is not only seeing all that is as essence, as good, as, you know, just right the way it is, but seeing this being as not separate from that, as much essence as everything else, and that the loss of that faith and leading to the Enneatype becomes the separation that really is still good, but I'm not participating in that essential goodness anymore, and therefore I'm not safe. So therefore the scheme is to always be watching
Where it's not safe.
Where it's not safe. What's gonna get me now? You know, and it could be a personal, emotional kind of getting me in a relationship thing, or it could be a physical thing, or but just always scanning for where is this being not safe? And I think how I often confuse that with a one is looking for where, you know, what's wrong. You know, but I realize the focus isn't so much on right and wrong, it's on safety.
So that's confirmed that you're...
Yeah, at least for now.
Right.
At least for now. So, you know, I just find that helpful, and I do see how pervasive, you know, the default focus of attention is on where's the problem coming from next.
Mm-hmm. It's good to see that process going on. You probably now see it everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah. Yeah, and interestingly enough, in terms of sitting meditation, where I have also been setting the attention to be more present to the counting and the breath, for whatever reason, in the last couple of weeks or so, I've developed an excruciating pain in my back that is not painful when I do anything else except sitting meditation, which I find curious. and so in a way it's been helpful because the counting and coming back to the breath in a way is just like, okay, I can do one more. So in a way that it's made the really being present to that easier in a way, because it keeps the attention from what else is going on in the body.
Giving you something to attend to other than pain,
right?
To just come back to the counting.
Yeah, and having to really check in often with, because I think it's got something to do with somehow the po- posture got off somewhere, either in sitting or in something else I did, that's caused some little spasmy thing to go on. So if I'm really attentive all the time, I can notice what adjustment in how I am will make the pain less. Mm-hmm. So the good part about it is that it has increased the intention to be there.
We're back to the towel drying thing, you know. Yeah. It's just to, yeah, giving you the opportunity to not do it habitually.
Yeah.
And to really be tuned into the subtleties of posture.
Right. Like I can't go unconscious or it's going to be really wicked thing. Mm-hmm. And also that keeps the attention focused on, well, at this moment it's okay, rather than the sixth attention on, oh my God, what's wrong with my back and what's going on there, and how did this happen and what should I do about it? And, you know, so because it, you know, I was re-listening to a thing that Sherry said about, you know, that when those stories come up and when we start to get pulled off on whatever road we usually get pulled off on, it's no longer an option to go that way. You know, we have to turn our attention back here. We have to stop that.
Mm-hmm. And training the attention, we've got to stop.
We can't go yeah. there anymore.
Yeah.
And that's really been so helpful, you know, because it wants me to go there, because that's where it gets me. You know,
right. So. And it just seems so harmless. What if I just wander, you know, to just have that brought back? But it's not.
It's not
harmless. It's a life, you know, and to bring it back here, boy, we would know if we saw a small child or something,
right.
You know, habitually wandering off toward the danger. We just wouldn't allow it.
And it is that wandering off of attention that is that separation between me and all that is. You know, I mean, that's the moment when it happens. That's when the enneotype gets a hold. That's when the I comes into being. You know, the whole thing happens right there. And it's I go back often to this sense I had when I was a little kid. I mean, little kid before I even had probably words. But that little kid knew. She absolutely knew that the world was totally trustworthy, that there was nothing in it to be afraid of. And she also absolutely knew that everywhere was something that was going to threaten her. They were both.
So she had that awareness at a really young age.
She had both of those.
Of the goodness and the possibility of threat.
Mm. Yeah. And, unfortunately, the possibility of threat's the one that ego got a hold of.
The condition. The experience of a conditioned human.
Yes, exactly. But fortunately, that what you are seeking is causing you to see. You never let me let go of the other either. So.
Great to have that awareness to go back to have that part of your makeup.
Yes. I just saw in that process of habitual patterns of wanting things always the same. Mm-hmm. Safety and wanting things the same. And I was really inspired to go home and move all my furniture. I'm going to do it that way just to see what happens. For the two, I think it's that illusion of control. Safety for this two comes in. Things are always where, but this is habitual because I often forget where I put things, yet they're always where I think they're supposed to be. But they're often not there because it's habitual. I'm losing my shoes constantly. I don't know how to lose them, but there's only two racks over there. I lose them. And I'm like, why am I not there? What am I saying? My hermit is like, I'll come in, and I know I have these habitual patterns, just hearing about that process of habit. Because it's like, I want it's for safety. Everything is how it's supposed to be, and when I walk in, it's how I left it, but I don't know if I was that conscious when I left it. Because I'll often go, oh, how did that get there? Which is interesting. So it'd be fun to move it all around weekly. Every week, I can just move it so that it's kind of a shock to the system.
So you're inspired to move everything
on
a regular basis just to watch what happens.
Yeah, just watch it
out to see what happens with those habitual patterns.
The holy idea for the two is holy will.
Holy will.
Which is right, the illusion of control. It's the universe is unfolding and it has its own direction and momentum, and we are part of all of that. And it's a divine will. And that there's just huge resistance to that. I can affect things. I didn't get this agency thing. It's been processed across the agency, and I've been reading it, and Transcending this book, and finally getting like, oh, I'm always efforting, believing that I can affect how life is going. And I'm constantly shown that I can't. It's constantly shown to me, like, no, not really. This is huge illusion.
It's interesting how we don't trust our experience, we trust this illusion over and over, even though we have no proof that that's what's so.
It's so true. I go to my beliefs and assumptions way over my experience. Because if I really went experientially, I just show up. Things happen. Mm-hmm. You know, life is constantly providing information. But I just saw in that process of a habit, that is really the place. And I was looking at the second assignment. Well, for starters, the forgetful thing. I read the assignment, then 10 minutes I forgot what the assignment was. I just totally don't even know what that assignment is. So I write it down, and I'm just going back to my little cards here. And it's, what does dissatisfaction show up for the two?
How does dissatisfaction show up for the two?
For the two. Because it's pointing out, I think it's dissatisfaction or suffering for me is feeling that the sense of I don't belong, the sense I don't have a place in the world, the sense is I'm here by mistake, and I have to earn my place in the world. And what it's pointing at the Enneagram, which is very, very my experience, is that in quotations, try to be helpful and indispensable.
Helpful and indispensable to earn your place in the world, isn't it? Yeah.
Wow. That is just my whole life track record. I'm needed and wanted and indispensable. And it indispensable made me laugh because it points at everything being fixed. If everything were fixed, then you could be indispensable. But everything's in flux and changing. So everything is dispensable. That's the whole nature of life, I think. It's all dispensable.
So you can see what a setup for dissatisfaction that is, to be in the position of being indispensable.
That's right.
Talk about a job that's always going to be open, you know.
Yeah. That's a good class that I'm interested in. And I do so relate to the layout of your own types. I do see parts of myself in many of the types, and this process earlier, or just recently about it, that that's not my particular karma, but I can see how it kind of works in, and like a 5 will say something, or an 8 will have an experience of karma, and I'm like, well, I don't really try to relate to that karma, but wow, it kind of gives me a broad perspective of how my karma plays on this.
Yeah, I think that was mentioned, you know, just being able to use that as a background to see your own karma just pop out.
Yeah.
And it's not how, you mean everybody doesn't see the world like like this?
That is so helpful. I for the longest time, believed everybody had seen what I was experiencing, what I was experiencing, and it was such a shock. When I finally really grasped partially that nobody's having my experience, which is so, especially in relationships, like, really? You don't see it that way? Are you serious? That's so black and white. The other person's like, are you kidding me? No. Not at all. I have no idea where you're coming from. I'm like, really? I just couldn't wrap my head around that. And now I'm starting to see, I see why. And I'm just coming from a totally different place. And all the filters, I have no idea what their filters are. I know my filters.
Right.
And if it's filtering and scrambling in my experience, God knows what's happening to us.
Right. We just cannot know what's happening for in this experience. Mm-hmm. We barely can know for ourselves.
True.
You know, without a lot of looking.
A lot of looking and a lot of reflecting and guiding and a lot of pointing. Mm-hmm. Any guidance on what to look at and where to look and how to look.
Thank you. June.
I've heard Sherry say many times, don't get in a contest with ego.
Don't get in a contest with ego, yeah.
And for long stretches of time, I've been in meditation. I've been taught how to do it. Because what it says is, you're making a contest.
It's just such a great example how it uses everything, you know, as
and I'm like, oh yeah, you're right.
What was that?
So I agree with that. And so the guidance for how to meditate is just out the window. And then it will, and it's so interesting that you guys are focusing on the counting. Because, and I'm not, I haven't been in the circle, in that loop.
You haven't known that that was what was up. Yeah.
That exactly what's been up in the circle. That's just an interesting.
So even though you didn't know that that's right, what everyone was focusing on, that has been what's up, been up for you.
Yeah.
It's
and
interesting.
So it's fascinating to sit and count and just watch it.
Crazy.
Just
wow.
Everything, every single thing. And an interesting aspect of it for me has been, you know, as long as I sit there, the sensations of life change. Mm-hmm. You know, the energy turns different, which turns the pulse different. Mm-hmm. It turns what it tries to distract me with. Mm-hmm. And just the whole series
to see the whole thing.
And the longer the meditation, the more boring it becomes. the distraction of choice.
Oh, the more boring the distraction of choice becomes?
Well, the more this is boring becomes the distraction of choice.
Oh, this is boring. Okay, got it. Yeah. Got it.
And it's just interesting.
Well, it sounds like you're seeing a lot with this practice that, you know.
Yeah. It's a contest. Okay, thank you. It's boring. Thank you. You know, and I'll go off a bit. Or the attention will wander, something will catch. And then back to just counting. How are you left to show the left? Thank you. And it's just over and over. And,
talk about boring, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as others indicated, some meditations are much easier not to interfere. Some are very hard, mm-hmm, to be there at home. Mm-hmm.
Which is informative in itself, yeah, isn't it? It's kind of interesting to see what, you know, when those,
yeah,
periods are and when, yeah.
Yeah. And back to the sensations in the body, changing them, they just do. It'll be interesting to watch whether bodily sensation, how much bodily sensation affects, whether it's easy or hard.
To see how the sensations that are arising in the body affect whether the sit is easy or hard.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Hot, cold, turning, looking hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
And I wanted to say something about me and Randall. I can't remember what it was.
Just go back to the county.
The most fun and liberating thing about being against it for me has been to realize that other people aren't just being difficult.
Other people just aren't being difficult, that they actually, yeah.
It does improve relationships, doesn't it? Or just, interaction with others to know that that's, that they actually may be seeing the world in a completely different way.
They could still be really wrong.
You could still be really right, and there could be really wrong, but it's just, at least you know they're not purposely doing it to annoy you.
One more thing that else we have to think about context that has been, I think it goes on my life a whole lot more than I sort of think it does or than I'm seeing. So this blends into how meditation's been turned, or counting the breaths has been turned into such a context. I think it's going to be, it's beginning to be helpful to see how other people, on a daily basis, I file them. We did not need the standards of information that should be. So, that's, I'm just beginning to get the inkling that the context is going on.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
So, get in. So just really get an inkling into that process that went on with the counting and how that goes into all different parts of your life, and that, you know, how it has set things up as a contest when, you might want to just get in there and see what's true about it. Okay, great. Thank you all.